welcome to episode 13 of the Mysterious Benedict Society Read Aloud Podcast, Book 4. Today we'll be reading chapter 13, but first a recap of chapter 12. Rennie figured out all of Mr. Benedict's riddle message, which led them to use the instructions on the gold-colored key for the blueprints that they discovered. The children have decided to go help Mr. Benedict, no matter how much the danger that they might be in. Rennie remembered a fond memory of Mr. Benedict and himself, talking about how hard it was going to be to leave Mr. Benedict and his friends behind. Stiggy and Rennie shared a feeling of hope. The children, plus Ty, were all going to help Mr. Benedict, but they couldn't go through the front or back doors because of the 10 men's cameras. So Kate set up a zip line across the street from the roof of Mr. Benedict's house so they could get past the cameras safely. But that's just one of the many crazy maneuvers that they would have to accomplish. Chapter 13. Plazas, Playgrounds, and Parts Unknown. From the roof of the Washington's back porch, Kate leaped into a tree and then to the ground, and presently she returned with a ladder for the others. Soon they were all bustling into the cellar where Kate unlocked the heavy steel door that opened into the secret passageway to the Monk building. Everyone looked expectantly at Ty. He gasped. The improvement of lighting and the reduction of vermin in the secret passage had been one of the Society's many projects, and so it was into a rather pleasantly lit and only moderately dank and creepy tunnel that they now hurried. Kate removed her parachute and handed it to Rennie to carry. Ty handed Kate's bucket to Stiggy, having first tried to hand it to Constance, who only looked at him. And then Kate took it off with Ty riding piggyback, followed at a distance by the others, who knew better than to try to keep up. "This is the tunnel," Kate said into Kate's ear. "The one you took from the Monk building to Mr. Benedict's house on the day you met." "Right you are," Kate said. "We'd just gotten through one batch of Mr. Benedict's tests, and we were on our way to more. It's so strange to think that we had no idea where we were heading then. Nowadays, this tunnel is where we tend to go when we want some peace and quiet, especially on rainy days with so many people around. It never gets completely quiet indoors." "You could use the husher if you wanted things to be quiet." "Well, it uses a lot of energy. Even with special batteries, it doesn't last long enough for you to really clear your head. No, the best thing is usually for us to come here. See how quiet it is? The only trouble is that sometimes we all want to use it. We had to make a sign-up sheet. Isn't that funny? Everybody takes turns just to get into a boring, old, empty tunnel." "It isn't boring. It's a secret." "Excellent point. If you put it that way, what could be better?" Kate hitched Ty up a little higher. "You don't come here together, though?" Ty asked a bit sadly. "We used to every now and then, of course," Kate said, "but usually this is a spot for solitude, a place to escape to when everyone seems to be stepping on your feet and getting on your nerves. You want to know my secret name for it?" "Oh, yes," Ty whispered. "Bill," Kate said. Ty giggled. "Bill? Why not? Bill's a good name. Solid name, Ty." They had arrived now at the bottom of the stairs leading up to Mr. Benedict's office on the 7th floor of the Monk building. Kate glanced back to ensure that her straggling friends were fine, and so they were, though she could hear their panting even from a distance, and she headed up the winding stairs with Ty on her back. By the time the others caught up, she and Ty had already reached the office's secret answer room, looked through the hidden peepholes to ensure that the office was empty, and selected from a rack of some clothing that would form Kate's disguise. Constance, Rennie, and Stiggy arrived gasping and perspiring. As they stood with their hands on their hips regaining their breath, Kate put on her parachute again. Over it, she slipped a pair of coveralls that normally fit the circus strongman physique of Mucho Brazos. "I'll have to build a hulking figure with a hunchback," she told her friends, "since it won't do to be seen in public with a parachute." "We discussed it," Ty declared proudly. "Also, we have to hide Kate's bucket in her duffel bag because it's famous." "I don't recall using that exact word," said Kate, pulling her hair up into a tight bun, over which she placed a greasy mechanic's cap. "You said it's well known," Tate amended. "And that much I think is safe to say," said Kate with a satisfied nod. Soon they were all ready, the anteroom vacated, and the plain interior of the office 7B filled with an unlikely assembly. A large, stooped mechanic, an average-looking young man in a blue uniform of a local high school, a handsome young dock worker with stylish glasses, an angry-looking kitchen employee with flour-dusted apron and an ugly hairnet, and a delighted-looking little boy, undisguised. The backpacks made the disguises less than perfect, but as long as they weren't seen together as a group, they should attract little special attention. Rennie looked at Constance. "Based on my information, we probably have a clear route to the parking deck, but what's your feeling about this building?" "Nothing weird on this floor," Constance said at once. "Let me take a look outside." After listening at the door a moment, she slipped out of the office and down to the end of the hallway. A window there afforded a good view of the city streets around the building. She looked out for several seconds, then returned and said, "I think you're right." They use a public building stairwell, which was always empty, and descended together, stomping every so often for Constance to sniff the air with her mental bloodhound's nose. No, the building was safe, she was sure of it now, and at last they were gathered on the first floor. Everyone donned glasses. The mechanic went out first, holding hands with a little boy and carrying a duffel bag. 2 minutes later, the kitchen worker and the dock worker left together. And finally, the high school student walked out of the doors of the Monk building onto its sunlit front plaza. Never particularly graceful, Rennie walked as casually as he could, his mind in a state of agitated confusion. The first time he crossed the plaza was years ago. He was walking into a new life. He could not help but wonder if he was doing the same thing yet again, this time walking in the opposite direction. His future had seemed so mysterious to him then. Now, after so much had changed, he found himself walking across the exact same plaza, feeling almost exactly the same way. It seemed so strange. How many more plazas, Rennie wondered, would he cross in his life? Meanwhile, the city streets appeared no different than usual. Plenty of pedestrians, plenty of traffic, plenty of noise. Plenty of businessmen in nice suits, too, and at first Rennie walked slowly, his weary eyes darting this way and that. Then he spied, some blocks ahead of him, the kitchen worker and the dock worker disappearing around a corner. If any of the baker's dozen were around, Constance would know it. Rennie picked up his pace. On the dimly lit underground level of a parking deck, a dilapidated old station wagon occupied one of the rental spaces. Only its tires looked to be in good condition, otherwise it gave the impression of being half abandoned. With dents, scrapes, rusty patches, two missing hubcaps, and an empty bird's nest in the radiator grill. As Rennie hastened to join the others already inside the car, Kate cranked the engine, which came to life with the roar of 100 lions. "Hop in," she cried brightly. Rennie hurriedly stowed his backpack in the rear of the car, with Kate's parachute and the other packs. The front passenger seat had been left unoccupied for him. He had to yank a few times on the door to get it open, but finally he succeeded and climbed in. Sticky and Constance were seated in the back, flanking Ty Lai, who was making cheerful fuss about his booster seat. "I've never been in a booster seat or a station wagon," Ty informed Rennie. "Today's your lucky day," Kate laughed, and she threw the engine into reverse. "Kate," Rennie cautioned, hurriedly buckling his seatbelt. "We need to avoid drawing attention to ourselves, remember?" Kate's hand tapped the gear shift, a look of disappointment settling into her face. "Right," she murmured. "Right, right, right." She backed out of the parking space smoothly and expertly, but without the least bit of panache. She sighed and drove them up onto the street. Kate, Rennie, and Stiggy had already discussed their route out of Stonetown. Every train station, airport, and toll booth in the city was compromised. The 10 men had their old network of local spies up and running, sharp-eyed informants who, out of fear or greed or both, would immediately contact McCracken with any news of information he sought. In this case, believing most of the society had fled the city, McCracken had possessioned those spies at all the usual points of entry. If Mr. Benedict's young friends came back to help him, McCracken hoped to know it. "But they aren't on the lookout for people leaving the city," Stig was explaining now to Ty. "So as long as we're careful, we're not likely to be spotted." "Oh, good," Ty said. He was craning his neck left and right, curious to see out of many of the station wagon windows as possible. "But how will we give Mr. Benedict what he needs if we're going away?" "We're coming back soon," Stiggy said. "First, we just need to get a little help." Constance removed her hairnet and threw it onto the floorboard with a look of disgust. She pulled her hair out of her eyes. Outside the station wagon, the downtown streets gave way to those of quieter neighborhoods. Kate was taking a roundabout path to an old, lesser-used highway out of town. Perhaps because everyone had been silent for several minutes, when another question occurred to Ty, he didn't blurt it out, but rather raised his hand politely. Stiggy smiled and asked him what the question was. Ty lowered his hand. "Why were we so worried about McCracken trying to get to SQ? Didn't he work for Mr. Curtin just like the others?" Stiggy hesitated. He saw Kate's eyes studying him in the rearview mirror. The fact was, he hadn't considered how to answer this complicated question. Not to a 5-year-old, not under the circumstances. And he felt a horror of messing something up. He cleared his throat. "Someone else want to take this one?" "Why don't you, Rennie?" Kate suggested. "I'm so busy driving and everything." Rennie shifted in his seat so that Ty could see his face. "You're right," he said. SQ and the Tinman used to be on the same team, kind of. But here's the situation, Ty. Mr. Curtin's letter said that SQ was getting something for him. The serum we mentioned. Well, if you were a bad guy like McCracken, and you weren't crazy about the idea of trying to break into a place that's supposed to be impossible to break into. And you realize that this serum, if you got your hands on it, might make you so powerful that you would never need Mr. Curtin's help for anything again? Well, you might prefer to get it from SQ before you could bring it to Mr. Curtin. That way you wouldn't have to try to do the big break-in. You wouldn't have to take any risk at all. Does that make sense? Ty's eyes widened. You mean McCracken was going to portray Mr. Curtin? Do you mean betray? Then yes. But that's terrible. You can say that again, Kate put in. They don't call the 10 men because they have 10 ways of helping people, you know. Hurting people is what they do best. but SQ got away thanks to Milligan. So now if McCracken wants to get more powerful, he either has to do what Mr. Curtin told him to do in the letter, which is risky for him, or... Or he could try to catch us, Ty said, because Sticky made the serum he wants. Three hands tapped three noses. Constance, for her part, said nothing. Behind her screen of scarlet hair, she might have been sleeping for anyone could tell. No one believed she was, however. McCracken and his men might still try to break Mr. Curtin out, Rennie said, even if he did catch us and try to get the serum. Mr. Curtin gave him a lot of reasons to try. But you know, we'd rather not get caught. I assume you feel the same way, Ty? Oh, yes, I do. Perfect. We'll make sure not to get caught, then. Eventually, the station wagon made its way through the outskirts of Stonetown, crossed an old out-of-the-way bridge, and finally turned onto a rural highway that passed through pleasant rolling farmland. The road was wide open with excellent visibility that would seem to invite, indeed even beg for, driving at excessive speeds. And yet the station wagon proceeded at a sensible pace, observing the speed limit with remarkable precision. Rennie looked over at Kate. "How are you holding up, champ?" "Great," Kate replied, flashing him a strained smile. "This is great. Beautiful day for a drive." Kate noted her clenched jaw, the white-knuckled grip she had on the steering wheel. No one in the world suffered so much as Kate Weatherall from not moving as fast as humanly possible, whenever the occasion allowed. Driving at this moderate speed was requiring a heroic effort on her part. In the back seat, Sticky had taken a couple of newspapers and was flipping through them, page after page. He had to keep apologizing to Ty for bumping him with his elbow, and Ty kept giggling and saying, "That's okay, just don't do it again." Then he giggled harder every time Sticky accidentally did it again. "Here's an interesting news item," Sticky announced. "Ty, did Constance tell you about the salamander?" "She didn't have to," Ty said. "I already know what a salamander is. It's an insect." "Well, no, if you're thinking of the animal, a salamander is actually a lizard-like amphibian." "Okay," Ty said agreeably, "now I know that." "Right, good. But the salamander I was referring to is an armored amphibious vehicle. Sort of a big metal boat with tank treads, so that it can go both on water and land." "I know," Sticky said, noting Ty's delighted expression. "It's fun to think about. Except this particular one belonged to Mr. Curtin and the Tin Men. It wasn't so great when they had it." Ty frowned and shook his head. "What's the news item, George?" Rennie called from the front seat. "I mean, I have a feeling." "Me too," said Kate. "It's pretty obvious," Constance said from behind her hair. Those were the first words she'd spoken in the car. Sticky informed Ty that after Mr. Curtin and the Tin Men had been captured, the government had decided to install the salamander in the playground area of Stonetown's largest park. Every day, children climbed into it, pretended to drive it, hid beneath the daring beginnings of hide-and-seek, and attacked it with sticks. "That sounds fun!" Ty cried. "Unfortunately," Sticky said, pointing at the newspaper article, "according to this, a salamander was stolen from the playground yesterday by a couple of men in business suits. No one was hurt in the process, although a number of children were seen to be crying." "Tin Men, they're so mean!" There was a general murmur of agreement in the car. "They must have had an extra set of keys and some spare parts in that vault Mr. Curtin mentioned," Kate mused. "The Tin Men probably stole the salamander," Sticky explained to Ty, "in order to get to the island if they try to break Mr. Curtin out. The shoals of the bay are treacherous and the currents are tricky, but with the salamander they can manage to cross fairly easily." "Roger that," Ty said. He scratched his head. "What island do you mean?" Sticky raised his eyebrows. "Wait, you don't know?" Ty shrugged. "How should I know?" "Well, because I guess I was thinking since Constance told you about when we went to the Institute..." "I didn't tell him about the prison part," Constance said with an exasperated sigh. "Why would I tell him that part, George?" "Which part?" asked Ty, squirming in his seat. "Which part?" "Should I not have mentioned?" Sticky wondered aloud. "Probably too late now," Kate said. Ty began chanting. "Which part? Which part? Which part?" "The part about where Mr. Curtin is in prison now," Rennie called back to him, "where he and Mr. Benedict are, the place we're going to have to go to." "Go back to," Constance muttered. Kai gasped, for now he understood. The society was returning to No Man's Land Island.